It's time once again for Dialogue Conspiracy with May Brussel. For the past 14 years, May has been researching and uncovering facts and evidence from between the lines of the news and placing them in a more thorough perspective of how conspiracy, political assassination, and abuses of power affect us all. Dialogue Conspiracy originates with KLRB-FM in Carmel, California. And now, May Brussel.
Good evening. This is May Brussel in Carmel, California. It's Dialogue Conspiracy number 310, and this is February 26, 1976. This is the last Sunday in February. They go around pretty fast. Last week on Dialogue Conspiracy, I talked about my friend Lillian Castellano, who passed away in Los Angeles February the 16th. We were all concerned about the cause of her death and about her research for the past 14 years that was literally her life these past 14 years. Since this last week has gone by, the house is still locked up where Lillian lived. The Los Angeles Police Department had come there. Evidently, a neighbor had called and told them to come check the house out. And the police had found her dead, and somebody, according to Ted Chirac, had heard them make a remark, this is one of those assassination conspiracy cases, something to that effect. The police have locked up everything in Lillian's house, and the family were allowed to go and search for a will. And no will has been found about what to do with her research. They have all agreed that Penn Jones, Jr. in Texas, should be the one to have her research on the John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy assassination. But the Los Angeles Police Department can hold all that research for 1 year if no will is found. Her very closest friend who worked with her, Floyd, can't believe that Lillian didn't have a will. She wasn't in the best of health, and they knew that she took such care of her research. And it's impossible to find this, so that Floyd and Ted Chirac, Jan Diaz, and other people in Los Angeles are really very concerned. And this is a good lesson to Mae Brussel and Penn Jones, Jr., and Ted Gandolfo and other researchers to get our own wills in order, which I'm doing this week, because if I were to be found dead and there were no will in my home, the police could then take all my research and lock it up for at least a year. At least that's what they're doing in Los Angeles. And nobody then would know what is missing because there's no index of the material. It's too massive. So if the Los Angeles Police Department keeps Lillian's material a year, we wouldn't know if they took out important photographs or not. There wasn't an inventory to go by or compare it to. And Bing is the very agency that she was exposing at the time of her death was responsible for selling the gun that Sirhan allegedly had in the Ambassador Hotel or cutting off the sleeve of Robert Kennedy or throwing away ceiling panels that would show the type of bullets that went into the ceiling the night Robert Kennedy was killed. Destroying vital evidence of this sort, it certainly would be easy to get rid of Lillian's material. So, as I say, the researchers are concerned that if there is no will, her nephew and family and cousins can't even touch the material for an entire year. And in that meantime, the very people that she was exposing at the time of her death, preparing papers on Attorney General Evel Younger, who was a district attorney when Robert Kennedy was killed in Los Angeles, and Ed Davis, the chief of police of Los Angeles, who helped cover up this case. Those two men will be running for governor. One will probably win, and the other will go on to national and international control and further fame. Within this 1 year, a lot can happen while Lillian's particular documentation is locked up. I did say that every week I'd talk a little bit about our Attorney General and Ed Davis, the two candidates for governor in California. There are a few quotations of Ed Davis I'd like to throw around for you, and we'll compile in some kind of a booklet soon. One was when he was talking about the farm workers, Cesar Chavez farm workers, and the gay rights group. He said in one speech that they ought to go together, in quotes, to form the United Fruit Party. He also addressed the International Association of the Chief of Police, and he told them that those people who opened their ranks to women were simply turkeys who, in quotes, caved into liberal pressure and filled their departments with undersized people, end quotes. Ed Davis, our candidate for governor in California, was a keynote speaker at the John Birch Society for the 1976 National Convention. He told the National Rifle Association in 1975, in quotes, today's law enforcement can't protect you, and urged them to keep up with their own rifles and guns and doing their own job because the law enforcement couldn't do as good a job, that they needed their own guns. Davis is backed, like I said last week, by Richard Vogary, the fundraiser for Ronald Reagan, and the supporter of the extreme far right wing throughout the country. He is managing the campaign of Ed Davis, the former chief of police. He also called part of Los Angeles a cesspool of pornography, fruit bars, bottomless bars, thanks to the United States and California Supreme Courts. So you could imagine if he were governor, what kind of appointments he would make to the California Supreme Court if he wanted to really crack down on a lot of the things that are going on in this state. He also told a group of people that I hold the line that to recruit minorities, gays, and women as police officers would only make me envision myself on some stage a graduation day giving a diploma to a 4'11" transvestite moron who would kiss me instead of saluting me. That's Ed Davis. He asked the law for the Los Angeles Police Department in 1970 to have a submarine in order to hunt the waters for drug smugglers and jet-powered helicopters for finding narcotics from Mexico. The Berkeley Barb had a long list of quotations, and I'm quoting some of those from them, and I have others in my files that I will be sharing with you. And, of course, Ed Davis is the man who wanted scaffolds at the airports to hang hijackers without trials, just hang them in public. I'm going back to where I was for the rest of this program this evening on the issue of the Los Angeles Free Press that was put out by Larry Flint, and it's on the JFK assassination, and I want to do some more critique on it as much as time allows. And what I don't cover, or I may do in a future program, and get caught up on later, you can read for yourself. You can order them, and if you write to me in care of P.O. Box 1109, Aptos, California, 95993, they're $2. That's $1.50 plus postage, and they're being sent out from this address, the copies of the Los Angeles Free Press. As I mentioned briefly in this article, the first contradiction of the material in there was the headline, JFK Murder Solved, the Killing Coordinated by the CIA, and that article is signed by Mark Lane. He's the author to that article. And then on the back page, Larry Flint has this appeal, help bring the JFK killers to justice, and you know he's ordering this $1 million reward. He claims, I will guarantee that we will protect every bit of evidence we gather. Just call 614-228-0877, Columbus, Ohio, and an independent panel of experts and judges will go over your material if you have information on who killed John Kennedy. And Larry Flint promised, in quotes, no more secret testimony behind closed doors. Now, he uses the word judges. If you send him material, he will have a panel of judges, and he acts as if this is going to be testimony that comes to him. He's asking people with information on the Kennedy assassination to reach him, and he'll present it to Mark Lane, Robert Groden, Dick Gregory, and several other people. The problem is here that Larry Flint has no way to guarantee protection to these people who send in information. He's listed a phone number, and he has a toll-free number and address. And right from the beginning with this advertisement, how could he possibly offer protection to these witnesses to the John Kennedy assassination? He himself is under indictment in Ohio for criminal charges, pornography charges. He's in trouble with the government and the law. And he has no means, no police force, no bodyguards to protect these people. And he's advertising they'll have protection. And here's the House Select Committee in Washington, D.C., that just got funds to investigate the Kennedy assassination. And starting with the very day that they got funded, the most important witnesses were murdered in succession. George de Morenschild, Carlos Prio Siqueiros a week later, Gary Powers, William Sullivan, and these four people were killed as soon as the House Select Committee got started. So why would he even say that they'd have protection? He should say, send in information at your own risk. He also says that this will be investigated with no closed doors, and yet sitting with Mark Lane in the offices at Century City in Los Angeles is an ex-FBI man who I saw there when I was down in L.A., who's going to assist Lane with lead and information. Now, what proof is there that this man isn't still working with the FBI? You remember at the time of Watergate, James McCord was an ex-CIA man who ran McCord Associates. E. Howard Hunt was an ex-CIA man who worked at Mullen and Company public relations firm, and yet the facts actually prove that they both still work for the Central Intelligence Agency. Why would an FBI man be working for Larry Flynt to receive information from very innocent people reading this ad who believe that there are experts and judges that are going to protect them if they come forward? The independent panel that he talks about isn't independent. They're not volunteering their time. They're paid large salaries. Lane has literally given up any law practice, moved out from Washington, D.C. to California to work just for Larry Flynt, getting this large salary, computers in the office, a staff, rent in Century City, which is no slouch area, right next to Beverly Hills, some of the most expensive office space in the United States, and is making an occupation of this, being paid full-time. And Robert Groden got an immense figure for the pictures in this magazine, the Zapruder film that they put in this issue. And these men are getting a large salary. It's a business and an occupation. It isn't independent. They're working for Larry Flynt. He's paying them. So that's a contradiction right there. And as I mentioned once before, this issue of the L.A. Free Press is undated, the one that says it's solved. It's published in the front. It says it's published by Press West on Hollywood Boulevard, but it isn't. It's shipped from Columbus, Ohio. The opening section has 35 different topics and articles. There's a table of contents with 35 different subjects, 46 pages in all in this Free Press issue. But the only article that has a name on it is Mark Lane's on the first article. It says the first article is by Mark Lane, and no other author is listed there. On the back, next to the last page, Larry Flynt said there's many frustrated journalists who couldn't get their articles printed in their own publications who have come to us, and their articles will appear here, and yet there isn't a single name of a frustrated journalist or any single person in this entire issue except Mark Lane's. And he promises in that issue that people will get their articles printed there. Ted Gandolfo said to Mark Lane on the telephone just last week, this is an opportunity now that you're living in California to see Mae Brussels' research, to get together and put some of her material in the Free Press. And Mark Lane said to him on the telephone, in quotes, to print Mae Brussels in the Los Angeles Free Press would be to admit to lunacy, to publish lunacy. Now, that isn't the first time that Lane has made these allegations. I threatened in 1976 a lawsuit against him, and he is on the radio throwing this kind of information out. But here's a contradiction again. Larry Flynt is saying the Los Angeles Free Press is objective, and it's your chance to get information out. And then it goes on and implies and is admitted that all of it must go through Mark Lane. And Mark Lane makes the decision where it goes. And Mark Lane can say, no, nothing that Mae Brussels publishes will go in this issue. And at the same time, Larry Flynt is paying Paul Krasner $90,000 a year to run his Hustler magazine. And the last three articles Paul Krasner ever published in The Realist were entirely my research. So he must know, Larry Flynt, that this isn't quite lunacy that I'm publishing in those three articles of The Realist. Because on what other basis would he hand over his entire publishing field to Paul Krasner? And he's saying that this is an outlet to get information out. And on the other hand, Lane is to screen it, even though they say it's objective. So if any of you want to write letters to Larry Flynt at Century City, I can give you the address on the phone, or you can write to me and question him about Mark Lane and the objectivity of the LA Free Press. I think it would be a good thing to do. Now, the first article in there, the one signed by Mark Lane, is titled, The CIA Conspired to Kill President Kennedy. New secret documents provide new evidence. Now, this is what the allegations are in Lane's article. First, the CIA was planning information about Lee Harvey Oswald's visit to the Soviet embassy in Mexico City and to the Cuban embassy in Mexico City that was purposely false in order to frighten the Warren Commission. Secondly, he made them believe that Lee Harvey Oswald was meeting with KGB member, a member of the KGB, who was a part of an assassination team. Three, the CIA was setting Oswald up as a patsy as early as October the 10th, 1963 with these false documents, and that the Warren Commission was given those documents January the 22nd, 1964, and that the Warren Commission was so frightened that by knowing that Oswald worked with a KGB member and the assassination team, that they suppressed facts about Lee Harvey Oswald in order to avoid a further war and a major scandal. These are the allegations of that first article. And he claims that Sylvia Duran in the Cuban embassy and CIA agents surrounding the Russian embassy were used for this hoax by the CIA, and they told the commission that Oswald met with Valery Kostikov, a KGB member. Now, first of all, there is nothing in that article, this first article, written by Mark Lane, that can prove that the CIA conspired to kill John Kennedy, as they advertise. It only indicates that the CIA assisted in a future cover-up of setting him up for something. Now, we know that Oswald was photographed in New Orleans with CIA agent Carlos Bringier, but the purpose of doing this, of identifying Oswald with a Castro-sympathizing committee, the Fair Play for Cuba, could possibly get Lee Harvey Oswald, say, to Cuba, where he could be part of an assassination team to kill Fidel Castro. It later could be used to frame Lee Harvey Oswald, but these photographs were taken in the summer of 1963, and they easily could have been done by the CIA to get Oswald to Cuba, just as they lied about his being at the Cuban embassy. They wanted to link him with Castro in Cuba, but it could have been to endear him to Castro as well as for any other reason. The piece of paper, the document about this Kostikov, has nothing about killing plans or the actual intent of setting up Lee Harvey Oswald as a patsy. The information was false, and the teletype that was set up on this information was October the 10th, 1963. It was sent to the FBI, State Department, Immigration Department, that a Lee Harvey Oswald was in Mexico. And it's true that a month later, Oswald was dead and charged with killing John Kennedy. 5 days after the assassination, President Lyndon Johnson formed the Warren Commission. And according to Lane, the October 10th teletype that they had made just before Oswald was killed, before Kennedy was killed, happened to be the very first evidence developed by the CIA to frame Oswald for the murder that was presented to the Warren Commission by January 22nd. Now, I don't agree with this at all. I don't believe that this document photographed in the Free Press, this teletype, was the first piece of evidence that the CIA was going to frame Lee Harvey Oswald. The first piece of evidence done was in the summer of 1963 before he ever went to Mexico. It was setting him up with those photographs and the altercation with Carlos Bringier that would be played immediately on the news. The minute John Kennedy was killed and Oswald was arrested, we saw Oswald handing out pamphlets in New Orleans. That scene was photographed and ready even long before the Warren Commission was set up. There was no intention for a Warren Commission at all. That came 5 days after John Kennedy was killed. That was set up. And it had to be set in people's minds that John Kennedy was killed by the Marxist Lee Harvey Oswald by Sunday evening, by November 24th, long before they ever knew there was a Warren Commission. And the first thing that would be shown would be photographs of Oswald handing out pamphlets for Fair Play for Cuba. So by summer of 1963, Oswald was set up as a patsy by the CIA. The second piece of evidence used to frame Lee Harvey Oswald as a patsy was a record made in New Orleans with Mr. Ed Butler. I own the record. It's a record called I Am a Marxist. Ed Butler works with Army Intelligence. He then moved to California to work for Patrick Frawley, who once owned large sugar investments in Cuba that were confiscated by Castro. On the back of the record that was circulated and shown and played, the speech of Oswald being a Marxist was already available as soon as Oswald was arrested, as well as the photographs. On the back of that record are pictures of Thomas Dodd, the senator, Hale Boggs of Louisiana, and Dr. Alt Noschner of the Information Council of Americas, all proclaiming Oswald was the Marxist. That's interesting because it's the son of Thomas Dodd in the Congress at the present time from Connecticut, who conveniently put Mr. Blakey, with his contacts of the CIA in charge of the House Select Committee. Dodd doesn't go far away from the Marxist story, and Blakey is covering up. But the record that Lee Harvey Oswald made in the summer of 1963 was the second piece of evidence to set him up as a patsy, long before this CIA document. The third piece of evidence to set Lee Harvey Oswald up as a patsy by the CIA was a telephone call, November 22, 1963, from a preacher in North Carolina who informed the authorities and the FBI that Lee Harvey Oswald's gun came from a Klein's gun mail order shop in Chicago, Illinois, under the alias. It was the alias of Heidel, and it was purchased in April of 1963 and received at a box that Lee Harvey Oswald never saw that rifle, and it was ordered in a name of an alias that Lee Harvey Oswald used. Now, this anonymous phone call was never checked out by the Warren Commission, and that was the third thing that framed Lee Harvey Oswald. By the time they were started in January, this was common knowledge in the media of this particular tip-off. The fourth piece of evidence that was to make Lee Harvey Oswald the patsy was a telephone conversation the day after John Kennedy was shot, transatlantic telephone conversation of Major General Walker, who works with Dr. Alton Ochsner and the Information Council of Americas, the same people who made that record. And he made a long-distance telephone call to Europe to a news service and told them, in quotes, that this man who shot at me in April 1963, this Lee Harvey Oswald, was the same person who shot John Kennedy, that he was the assassin. And this was the setup of shooting through General Walker's window and giving the excuse of linking Lee Harvey Oswald to the Walker shooting and then to the Kennedy shooting. Had links to the intelligence, the CIA community in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and military intelligence. And this was all long in advance of October the 10th, 1963. As a matter of fact, I have correspondence and documentation from a gentleman named James Frankenberry. He wrote to me in January 1974. The last I heard from him was in 1976, and I should be writing to him more. He was in the Army in 1962 and was sent to Fort Bragg, North Carolina, and he had special training and was told that he belonged to a team who were going to be working on assassinations. The excuse for the team was that they were going to fly to Germany and kill a Russian agent who had information about CIA operations over there. But later he realized that the assignment that they were going to have, one of the targets, was to be Major General Edwin Walker. And he has given me the names and other persons of the people in his unit that were supposed to kill General Walker. And he was the one who said there were three teams of five persons each who trained an assassination team, and that they had this dummy on a little train, and they were to aim for the head and practice the head. He named five people: Robert Fleming, James Kelly, Peter Marchand, Robert Lawrence, and himself, as being on a special terrain where they had a stalking procedure, sniper weapons. This was in Fort Bragg, South Carolina, in June of 1963. And they participated. The operation was called Operation Thereon. It was at Camp David, and they were to be ready for assassinations. And he was told, this is interesting, because he wrote this in 1974 to me in correspondence, and what he's saying, it's confirmed in a new book called Operation Mind Control by Mr. Ballard. The officers who hired him for this assassination team said that if he told anybody the story of what was happening, no one would believe him. And if he said any more about it later, they would place him incommunicado and give him special treatment. And he said that after Watergate, he realized that he recognized E. Howard Hunt as one of the men that met them in the Spanish restaurant and was making arrangements, this is what he said, for these assassination teams. So they sent him in 1969 to a Springfield Medical Center, and they went about making his assertions be proven untrue. And he was afraid that his memory would be erased, but he still had a memory to write in 1974 and up to 1976. But the threats that he gave him are the exact threats that are written up in this book, Operation Mind Control, that men were told that if you expose what happened, we will fix you so that nobody believes you anyway, and we can erase your memory. So the point is that long before, months before this memo of the October 1963 story in the article in the Free Press, there was every indication that Lee Harvey Oswald was being set up as a patsy. Now, Mark Lane said the CIA used episodes surrounding Lee Harvey Oswald's trip to Mexico to implicate the Soviet Union, Fidel Castro, and the JFK assassination plans. And ultimately, the CIA could terrorize the Warren Commission and compel them to issue a false report. Now, that is a strong statement. It implies that the Warren Commission protected the FBI and the CIA. It implies that the KGB ran the Warren Commission. It implies that all the evidence we're talking about being suppressed or the falsification of documents or hiding John Kennedy's brain or dry cleaning John Connally's clothing or burning autopsy papers was all done because the Warren Commission was afraid of the KGB and that they would go to such lengths to cover up for the KGB. Now, the date that Mark Lane gives in this article for the terror of the Warren Commission, he says in quotes, on January 22, 1964, the Warren Commission, the CIA warned the Warren Commission of Oswald's alleged relationship with a KGB officer, and this was sent to the commission before the first witness was testified. And as I think I mentioned to you before, and I want to reiterate it again, Gerald Ford wrote in his book, The Portrait of the Assassin, that what terrified the Warren Commission at their meeting was that Lee Harvey Oswald was allegedly an agent of the FBI. I have documented proof in my files from the National Archives that at the same meeting, the Warren Commission on January 22, 1964, was told Lee Harvey Oswald also worked for the CIA as well as the FBI. So you have to take your choice, and it's very important to realize that Lane is stressing that they were completely cowed and humiliated because they were protecting us against a war with Asia, and they covered up this evidence to protect the KGB because of these terrible secrets that they knew about Lee Harvey Oswald. Now, there isn't a bit of evidence to support this article. I've gone through material for 14 years. Every minute of the Warren Commission meetings, every question asked every witness not called, every time they go off the record or change their subject, indicates that the Warren Commission was protecting the FBI and the CIA. When Earl Warren was with Jack Ruby in the cell interviewing him, Ruby wanted to tell about the assassins. He says there's a group of people far right in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. He wasn't allowed to talk. He told them he would be dead, and he was dead. Was Ruby killed by the KGB, or was he killed by the CIA's special cancer? I don't believe that the KGB ran the Warren Commission. I don't believe that the Warren Commission served out of fear. Every question they asked, every time they went out of the room when a major witness was called, everything they did showed that they were protecting Navy intelligence, Army intelligence, and the operations that came from the Pentagon. And the important thing about this article, the entire issue of the Free Press, is that the emphasis of the story is on the FBI and the CIA. And I think it should be on the Pentagon. I think it should be at the National Security Council level. I think the guilt should go as high as the White House. I don't believe for a minute that Lyndon Johnson wasn't covering up from the word go because he was part of the plans of bringing John Kennedy to Dallas and part of the plans of covering up the evidence, Parkland or his friend Clifton Carter taking the clothing of John Connally and giving it to Congressman Gonzalez when it's dry cleaned. I don't believe that the true story is in this issue. And next week, I may go into some more articles in this issue, such as the one on Priscilla Johnson. In other phases of the L.A. Free Press stories, there are other articles there. The authors aren't mentioned, references are given, to show you how it diverts from some very important leads that are available. And I did want to tell you how I took issue with the first article with Lane, because there was every indication that the Warren Commission knew very early that the FBI and the CIA were making Lee Harvey Oswald the patsy. Well, our time is up now. You can order these copies of the Free Press, and we'll probably do more a little bit next week on that. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California, and I'll be seeing you next Sunday.
You've been listening to Dialogue Conspiracy with Mae Brussels.